you're non-Jew, if you're Jew, if you're whatever you are equal, right? Why is calling for equality and, you know, being against genocide somehow? Is that the Britain that we want? Is that the Britain? That's not the Britain that I thought I'd be living in 2025. Britain that says I cannot be a doctor if I am against supremacy and apartheid. But that's what they're trying to do. This is the fight that we're up against. And it's really sad. It's really, really sad. They can't prove that I've ever harmed a patient because I haven't, or ever been prejudiced. And all of the other doctors and healthcare workers that they've attacked, they can't prove it. But if they succeed, which they won't, because we'll fight them, but if they succeed in removing us from the medical profession, what will happen is you'll have a medical... You'll end up having an environment in healthcare in Britain where the people who were the most outspoken about the worst crimes ever that we've seen are no longer there. And I think that's the most dangerous part of all. If they start to introduce more of Palantir that is taking our patient data, you know, this is a company that we know is involved with the Israeli occupation forces. The privatization, any sort of corruption in the NHS, if the people there now have not spoken out against the mass murder of children, what guarantee do you have that they'll speak about that or stand against that? Because we will. You're guaranteed that we will. But if we're gone, then you're going to have what they want is the obedient, head down. Being a doctor, being a healthcare worker is a checklist. You do what you need to do. You're a shift worker. You go home, and that's so separate. But that's not what medicine. That's not the medicine. That's not why I became a doctor. That's not what medicine is. Healthcare is not just my list of jobs. It isn't just the operation I'm about to do. Yeah, it is. You have a role in society. You have a duty to your fellow humans. If you care about the sanctity of life, and you really. You know, if you're a real doctor, then you're a doctor at all times, not just when you're prescribing a medication.
The harassment and targeting of the livelihoods and careers of other pro-Palestinian voices was now the blueprint of the Israeli lobby in the UK. When online harassment failed to lead to capitulation, the next step was a full-scale move to get these groups and individuals removed from their jobs, lose record deals, sponsorships, whatever it would take to shut them up.
He's under arrest. Why?
The fact that Dr. Ladwan's arrest on trumped-up charges came just hours before she was supposed to face a tribunal for the second time in a matter of weeks was not coincidental. A night in the cells did nothing to dampen her resolve. The intensity of the attacks have spilled over into credible threats made against her life.
The most surprising aspect of these attacks were how they actually threatened my safety, my real life safety. The danger that I felt was being placed on me and my family, I think that was the most shocking. As well as how they've escalated, how it feels, how relentless they can be. I don't think there's been a few days where there hasn't been an attack since the defamation in the Daily Mail in February. I never realized it would be so intense like this, so real, quite dangerous. To the point where a few days ago I didn't get a death threat, and I thought, wow, I didn't get a death threat today. And then yesterday someone commented and said, very soon, Rahmi, with a timer running out, sleep with one eye open. And When they first started happening, I thought, that's really strange. Like, I've never had that. But because of how intense they've gotten, and when I had to call the police, they've changed. The way that I see them has changed. It feels like a real threat. You know, somebody. This one was probably the one of the worst ones, because I literally had, like, I saw it on my phone, and I had to do that in real life. And I don't know what I had just said. I think I had. It was a post on X, and it was. My posts are always either mourning the Palestinian martyrs, or sharing news and, like, commentating on it, or saying that I'm sort of against the war crimes and the system that is being propagated, Zionism, Jewish supremacy. And somebody commented and said, I'm going to come to your house and slit your throat. And, like, it, you know when you just, like, you feel like your breath has been taken away a little bit. That's there. I don't know. I just don't understand why. I was thinking, so many things were going through my mind. I was like, well, this surely can't be a real person. Is this a bot? Why would a bot write that? Like, who's programmed the bot to write that? If it's a real person, then why would you want to slit my throat? I think even, like, in a normal, like, setting, even when, if people write, you know, really outlandish comments, or if people write outlandish comments, or if they say something that's a little bit, like, you think, I see sometimes people will post something that I think, oh, that's a dangerous thing to say, like, that's not. Or maybe, oh, that's a little bit, that's illegal, that's a threat that you've made. I don't expect that people would go and threaten that person.
That means we don't need it to be translated when the woman who had 9 of her children killed.
Dr. Ladwan does not want pity and for the focus to be on her personal fight. The focus of her activism has always been for the innocents being subjected to a genocide at the hands of Israel and its backers, and for the care of her own patients.
I feel so ashamed to pity myself or get emotional, because there's just, you know, there's Palestinians we know who, like, have lost, like, all their family members. There's, like, Palestinian babies in hospitals that are the only survivors of their families. And they don't know it because they're babies, but so it feels wrong to pity ourselves, or, you know, feel like, oh, we're going through so much. But I just think, I don't know, you know, I don't expect to be treated in any way better than anybody else. See, that's the whole point that we're campaigning for, is that we're all equal human beings. But it feels like, I don't know. Like, I feel like I have a duty to my community and my patients and the Palestinian people, especially that the bombs that are shredding them to pieces are, you know, using my taxes. It's something out of my control. But I feel like I have a duty to be doing what I'm doing. And some people say, oh, well, you don't have a duty to say glory to the breaking of the 17-year siege. And I feel like I do, because not enough people say it. Not enough people center the right narrative.
The new tribunal adjourned the case, meaning this saga continues to hang over Dr. Ladwan. The General Medical Council, the GMC, denies that it's brazenly renewing legal action until it and lobby groups like the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism get the result they want. With no new evidence of wrongdoing presented, regulators seem content to simply drag the process out to maximize harm to Dr. Ladwan and her career.
Now you see what that did, and that made an independent ruling, an independent panel buckle. That is perversion of justice, of the rule of law in Britain. It may start at a hearing for a doctor, which I don't think we should take lightly, because we're here to save lives, to treat the British public. But that means that sets a really outrageous precedent where we might be seeing court rulings being negotiated again.
Despite the threats and the intimidation, this proud pro-Palestinian knows her purpose.
I try not to show my vulnerable side online for two main reasons. Exactly. The one is that what I said, you know, Palestinians are the focus. Yes, everybody's struggle is valid, but for me, it is just my everything I've gone through in terms of the emotional stuff. I am alive, right? I'll talk about it. I want to share the people story and voice who are not guaranteed to be here in an hour or tomorrow. I was just upset about the Holocaust, and they put me in danger, like real danger. Then that's when I knew. I was really crying at work, you know. I was just upset, and they went so far as to, you know, me having to call the police. I realized then that when they see weakness, when they see emotion, they actually just escalate. They come harder at you, which is so demonic.
Make you feel invincible. Allah's love has no limits. Allah's love has no boundaries. For every raindrop that falls, for every ray of sunshine, for everything is under His control. You cannot see Allah, you cannot touch Allah, but you can feel Allah. He is there in every tear that falls, in every smile that shows. Allah is all around us. I am whatever I may be, but Allah has already planned my destiny.
Good night to all our listeners. You are tuned in to Iran Radio, broadcasting from Tehran. I'm your presenter for the next hour. Stay with us into the early hours of this morning. We start off this hour's lineup with Islamic laws. The program focuses on Islamic Sharia law and adopts a practical approach. After that, we have insights into the Holy Quran. The program presents a short exegesis and explanation of the ayahs of the Holy Quran. And our final program this hour is Leader's Speech. The program presents an English translation of a selection of the statements and speeches of the Honorable Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Stay with us for the next hour.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the program.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. We are about to actually continue our discussion regarding some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei with you. We have been doing that actually for a couple of episodes in the past, and we'd like to do so in this episode too. Let me begin our episode with this question. If a government contractor were to give a monetary gift to the government official by whom he is hired, or to the government supervisor who is responsible for assessing and overseeing his work, would this be permissible?
Well, it's very much clear that a gift is given to, let's say, to a government official to appease him, okay, to draw his attention. This is nothing but a kind of corruption. It is not permissible for the recipient, who is supposedly a government official, to use that gift. Whatever the name you call it, it could be a kind of gift, or in other words, it could be a kind of bribe, okay? But anyhow, the term bribe is less likely to be used in this context. So it's a gift that must not be received by the government official. It is the government's official to do his job without receiving any gifts. So according to His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, may Allah grant him long life, all such practices that can actually potentially lead to the spread of the kind of corruption are to be avoided under all circumstances and at all costs.
Mm-hmm, I see. Well, I'm going to ask you something regarding tayammum, Sheikh.
Yeah.
Is it necessary to wipe our forehead by the palms of the hand, or is it valid actually if you do so by the fingers? And what's the prayer said after doing tayammum, wiping the forehead by the hand?
Right. In tayammum, of course, wiping should be done by the inner surface of the hands, from the wrists to the tip of the fingers. So, first of all, you wipe the forehead, and it's both sides, from the hairline to the to including the eyebrows, by both hands. Make sure that the palms, the inner surface of the hands, are used to cover those areas: the forehead, the eyebrows, and the two parts of the two sides of the forehead. So then you move the palm of your left hand on the back of the right hand, and the palm of your right hand on the back of your left hand. And also, according to His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, the obligatory precaution is to hit your hands on the ground and move the palm of your left hand on the back of the right hand,
mm-hmm.
and the palm of your right hand on the back of your left hand. The point is to hit the ground, the floor, the dust. Okay.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's not a fatwa to hit the ground, right?
Yes.
With your hands on the ground, it is just an obligatory ihtiyat or precaution. Okay.
And should the surface be dusty, or no? Any piece of a stone would suffice it.
If
you want to do tayammum instead of wudu.
Yeah, of course, it should be. If it's dusty, it's okay.
Uh-huh.
It's quite good to,
yes.
To have dust.
If it is not dusty?
If it's not dusty, and there's nothing, no dust to be found, there is a piece of stone, there are pebbles, small
right?
sands.
Yes.
Of course, you can do tayammum on the sands, okay? But it's much preferable to find dust anywhere.
What about the stone which you find, for example, in the chapels of the hospital?
I don't think, you know, because there's there are stones, or you find them, they are
a piece of clay, but it's actually the, what you may call it, a dry piece of clay.
Dry piece of, do you mean bricks?
Like bricks, for example.
Well, I'm not sure if the religious authorities allow doing tayammum on the...
What about the stones? Bricks. Piece of
stones? Stones are allowed doing tayammum on stones.
But there is no dust on the stones.
Of course, but it's not necessary to collect dust,
uh-huh.
to put... otherwise, there's dust everywhere. You can put it on your face. That would
suffice.
Work. But
yeah,
but
thank you very
the
much.
Philosophy is not to collect dust. That's why, because when you when you hit your hands with your palms on the floor, you can shake your hands to remove off the dust.
Right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Sawid. Let's actually take a break, and then we'll be back and continue our program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio.
Followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, yeah, Allah. Guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Welcome back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jahad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are still speaking about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Sheikh Javid, somebody asked us that he's a marketeer, and sometimes he has to deceive his customers or force them to buy you know, their products, for example. Is that allowed actually to do so?
Deception is not allowed. It is not a tactic to be permissible. These religious authorities and Islamic law, generally speaking, does not allow any deception, any kind of playing a trick, or any kind of fraudulent activities.
Mm-hmm.
It's necessary to be honest and to just tell the truth to the customer. If there is any defect, if there is any kind of problem with the items which is being sold to the
mm-hmm.
customer,
yes,
that defect must be told, the buyer must be informed about it. Otherwise, the buyer has the right to rescind
mm-hmm.
or to cancel the transaction.
Yes.
So to be a marketeer is no problem. It is okay to just to be a vendor or
mm-hmm.
a seller to a businessman. That's fine.
Yes.
But it's not allowed under any circumstances to deceive one's customer or to force them to buy something when they do not want to buy it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Who would pay the expenses of caring for parents, her daughters or sons, if they have enough money or income? Who should look after them?
Well, it depends on the existing situation of the mother or father. If they have enough income, no one is to pay for their expenses. They can manage their lives by themselves. They can run. They have their own sources of income. But if they are desperate, if they are in need of help, it is the duty of the children, male or female, it makes no difference, to
mm-hmm.
pay without any difference, of course, among them. Whoever can afford to help his or her parents
mm-hmm.
must do so within his or her ability, as far as it lies within him or her, right?
Mm-hmm.
As far as he or she can afford to help. So it's not, it's wrong to expect the male children to support their parents financially, and then the female children are absolved and they are relieved of the obligation. No, every child has to play his or her own duty and role to support their parents financially. They should do it in a way that the parent is not bothered or disrespected or kind of obliged, right?
Yes.
It's necessary to maintain the parents' dignity and self-esteem.
I see. Yeah. Thank you very much. Let's take another break, and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Stay tuned.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Welcome back to the program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javed, our guest speaker. We are still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Javed, what's the Sharia law regarding selling muddy vegetables to customers? Or, let's say, to pour water on the vegetables, you know, to keep them fresh, and then sell them like that, because actually it, you know, overweighs their original value and an original weight, right?
Right. Well, in itself, in by itself, of course, there's no problem in selling muddy vegetables or pouring water on the vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is exposed to the buyer, and
yes,
it's quite, the buyer can see the vegetable that is wet and that it's muddy.
Yes.
There is mud clinging to the vegetable. So, of course, He has the right to buy it or not to buy it. Okay, the transaction is permissible. The transaction is valid according to His Eminence Quran Ayatollah Khamenei.
Mm-hmm. I see. Is it permissible to sell vegetables in bunches or cleaned?
Right. It is. There is no problem. It is. It's quite okay. Permissible to sell it in whatever way one chooses to sell. It's normal to do so. Of course, to sell vegetables in bunches.
Yes.
And also to clean the mud from the vegetables and to sell it. Okay.
Yes.
So when you clean the mud and remove the mud, the price goes, the price increases,
mm-hmm.
and people are more likely to buy it.
I see. Well, thank you very much, Javed. Thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to your own program. That is the Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, whereby we try to deal with normally, some of the jurisprudential laws. Whether they are related to a topic or not, like of general and miscellaneous nature. And in this episode, we try to actually deal with some of them for you, based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei, of course. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran.
insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, hello and welcome. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll have a look at some of the contents of Surah Ankabut. So now let's listen to the 41st verse again.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
مثل الذين اتخذوا من دون الله أولياء كمثل العنكبوت اتخذت بيتا وإن أوهن البيوت لبيت العنكبوت لو كانوا يعلمون.
The example of those who take allies other than Allah is like that of the spider who takes a home. And indeed, the weakest of homes is the home of the spider, if they only knew.
So, brothers and sisters, regarding this 41st verse, previously we mentioned that this whole chapter, this whole surah, has been entitled Ankabut because of the name of Ankabut in this verse. So, مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ اتَّخَذُوا مِن دُونِ اللَّهِ أَوْلِيَاءَ كَمَثَلِ الْعَنْكَبُوتِ. The parable of those who take guardians beside Allah is as that of the spider. اتَّخَذَتْ بَيْتًا, that makes for itself a house. We had a closer look on the quality of the materials, on the actually structure of this so-called house of Ankabut. And we had a bit of a comparison between what these houses and nests of the animal actually are. And we understood that why, in comparison with other houses, this is called Awhan al-Buyut, the frailest of all houses in this verse of the Quran. We also said that we are not ignorant of the fact that this house of spider, although it is mentioned as a proverb for this, for the weakness it has, it is one of the wonders of the world. The webs of spider are made from some viscous liquid, which is stored, which is actually stored in some small cavities, as small as the needle point located under its belly, and this liquid, saved and stored in the body of Ankabut and spider, has a very special combination that when it is exposed to the weather, it becomes hard and firm. And this is one of the wonders, one of the great wonders of the world. So, and it actually shows how great the Almighty Allah is. By its particular claws, spider draws that liquid out from these cavities and makes its webs by it. Some commentators have said that the weakness of these webs is because of their extraordinary tenderness. Else it is stronger than a steel string with the same thinness. So it is actually surprising that each of these webs sometimes comes out from a very small hole which is under its belly and in its body. And now you may think that how tender, exact, and narrow every one of these secondary webs is produced.
مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ اتَّخَذُوا مِن دُونِ
So, dear listeners, besides this material that this house has, and which has been mentioned in the structure of the spider's house, its structural shape is also very interesting. We said we're not negating the fact that we can reach the greatness of the Almighty Allah by merely looking at this very frailest of houses, أَوْهَنَ الْبُيُوتِ. But the verse says in the very end, لَوْ كَانُوا يَعْلَمُونَ, if they know this, which means the ones who are ignorant of this fact, they think that this is the best house, this is the best refuge they might find. But they are ignorant of the fact that they are adhering, they are sticking to the frailest of houses. But at the very same time, we're not negating its beauty. I mean, if you look carefully at the sound houses of spiders, you see an interesting scenery, like a sun with its sunbeams. And it's really interesting. And this house, of course, is a suitable and ideal house for a spider. But on the whole, there cannot be considered a house weaker than this. I mean, the objects that these pagans worshipped, other than Almighty Allah, are like this house. Regarding the fact that the spider is not only of one kind, and some scholars claim that more than 20,000 sorts of spiders have been known until now, and each of them have some specialities, the greatness and power of the Almighty Allah is made in the creation of this small creature as well. I mean, if one were to look closely, he would actually understand how great the Almighty Allah is. But the application of the Quranic word awliya instead of asnam may point to one important fact. The verse says, مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ اتَّخَذُوا مِن دُونِ اللَّهِ أَوْلِيَا, the parable of those who take guardians beside Allah as the is as the parable of spiders. So the verse says, these pagans have chosen some people other than the Almighty Allah as their awliya, as their guardians. But it could have said asnam, which means the idols. But why is it? This application might point to this fact that not only the man-made objects of worship, but also the leaders of non-religious groups are in the same row. And the sentence, لَوْ كَانُوا يَعْلَمُونَ, in the very end is also mentioned, and it is about the idols and those false objects of worship, and it is not about the weakness of spider's house, because the weakness of the spider's house is known to all mankind. But the point is that these people did not know what they're sticking to. So the concept of this sentence overall is, if they were aware of the weakness of the objects of worship and the positions that they had chosen other than the Almighty Allah, they would know well that these are like the webs of spider from the point of weakness. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
I've thought of this before over a million times. Who would ever thought that it would be our time? I just know it, 'cause you're the one. It ain't a selfish love,
Oh, don't you know it? You are the one. You are the one. Oh, won't you be the one?
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
The following is part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with school and university students. The meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Rahmatullah Alayhi Husayniyah on November 3, 2025, on the eve of Student Day and the National Day of Fighting Global Arrogance. They attribute the conflict between the Islamic Republic and the U.S. to your chance of down with the USA. They're being naive. It's foolish to think that simply because a nation chants down with the USA, its enemy would become this antagonistic for that reason alone. No, the down with the USA slogan isn't a matter of such gravity that the US would oppose, confront, and challenge Iran solely because of that. The issue is a matter of an inherent conflict, an inherent incompatibility. It's a clash of interests between the two currents, the U.S. and the Islamic Republic. Some people ask, all right, we haven't surrendered to the U.S., but does that mean we'll never have relations with them? Are we going to oppose the U.S. forever? The answer to that question is as follows. First, the U.S.'s arrogant nature accepts nothing other than submission. This is something that all the U.S. presidents have wanted. They just didn't state this openly, but the current U.S. president has stated this. He said Iran must surrender. He essentially gave this matter away. He exposed the U.S.'s inner nature. They wanted the submission of a nation like Iran with all its capacities, its vast wealth, its background of thought and knowledge, and all its bright, highly motivated young people. What would be the meaning of such a surrender?
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Now, we cannot make guesses about what's going to happen in the distant future, but everyone must know this, that the solution to many of our problems is us becoming strong. We must make the country strong. The government must carry out its work in its various sectors with strength. The military forces must carry out their duties with strength. The youth must pursue their education and scientific advancements with strength. If the country becomes strong and the enemy senses that confronting this powerful nation will bring no profit but only loss, then the country will definitely become immune. There is no doubt about that. Military strength is essential, scientific strength is essential, and good management of the country is essential. These things must be carried out. The strong motivation of you, the youth, is also essential. So don't lose this motivation. Don't lose this spirit.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you. That you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways
the heart of beautiful Iran.
Good night to all our listeners. You are tuned into Iran Radio, broadcasting from Tehran. I'm your presenter for the next hour. And here are some interesting facts about the Holy Quran I invite you to listen to. Surah Yasin is considered the heart of the Quran for its tremendous benefits for the believer. The best drink according to Quran is milk. In the Quran, Allah also describes the rivers of milk in the heaven. The best food according to Quran is honey, which cures several problems and is the sweetest gift to humans from Allah. Normally, the Quran declares Friday as the most blessed day of the week. The month of Ramadan is the best month of the year, and the night of Qadr has been described as a night better than 1,000 months. Its significance is described in Surah Al-Qadr. We start this hour's lineup with our varied radio productions feature. Then we have today's special daily mixed format program that deals with various Islamic and Iranian occasions. And our final program this hour will be our radio productions feature. Stay with us for the next hour.
What if we were able to target cancer cells directly without affecting the healthy tissue surrounding it? Well, that's exactly what the scientists here at the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran have been able to do using yttrium-90. So in this week's episode of Iran Tech with me, your host Ali Reza, we're going to dive deep into how yttrium-90 can be used to target cancer cells in the liver directly without affecting the healthy tissue surrounding it. Stay tuned. Let's clarify something first. When I say liver cancer, I don't mean just the type of cancer that the cancer tumors that originate from within the liver. I also mean other types of cancers that have metastasized, and you can find the metastasized cancer tumors inside the liver as well, which actually makes up the majority of liver cancer cases. And treating liver cancer has been traditionally difficult using surgery and chemotherapy because only about 30% of actual patients qualify to get these treatments. And, you know, speaking of the treatments, chemotherapy itself is unpleasant, and we all know it. You lose body hair, your body is weak. There's plenty of reasons to try to avoid it if you can. And you can using this groundbreaking technology. Microspheres that contain yttrium-90, these tiny glass beads with this radioactive isotope, the radioisotope of yttrium, not the neutral yttrium-89, the radioactive one, yttrium-90. So you can inject these tiny glass beads into the bloodstream, into the blood supply of the cancer tumors, and it can selectively, using selective internal radiation therapy, SIRT, it can target those cancer cells directly and, you know, leave everything else untouched. So this is how yttrium-90 can help treat liver cancer. So first, we're going to learn about how it's made, and then we're going to take a closer look at how it works.
Our particle manufacturing process as microspray involves several stages. To create the particle, we first combine the raw materials and form a suspension. We then synthesize them using the Sol-Gel method.